Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. It is episode number 249, one away from 250. That's coming at you next week, but we have an amazing show for you this week. If you want to get in touch with us, just drop us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter, and of course, go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Jam-packed action. We must get started with our first guest. Fortune Feimster is one of the funniest folks you will ever encounter. You know her from her writing and roundtabling on Chelsea Lately and for her work on After Lately. She's a Sunday Company Groundlings alum. She was a semifinalist on Last Comic Standing. She was selected as one of the new faces at the renowned Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal. She has performed all over the world to sell out crowds, and it was just announced that she'll be a series regular on the new Tina Fey sitcom coming soon to Fox. She will be appearing here in Cleveland at the Grog Shop on February 27th. I already have my tickets. And then she'll be appearing at the Wall Street Club in Columbus, Ohio the next day on February 28th. Hey, Fortune, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Wow, what an intro.
How the heck are ya?
Doing really well. How are you?
We have so much to chat about. Are you ready?
I'm so ready. Let's do this.
Well, let's get this out of the way right from the start. You did not wake up in a fit of rebellion at like 16 years old and said, everyone, you will now call me Fortune.
I did not do that. No, Fortune is my middle name, and it's my grandmother's maiden name, and she wanted my mom to name me Fortune. So they compromised and gave it to me as a middle name. So I actually grew up as Emily, which is my first name. And when I was like 20 and I started performing, I was like, I have this cool middle name, and it was kind of like a way to sort of pay homage to my grandmother. And so I started going by Fortune.
Nice. And it is my impression from seeing your comedy quite a bit that folks do not immediately accept that your name is indeed Fortune.
They don't. I definitely, like, either people never forget it or they find it to be, like, think it's something whimsical, you know, like treasure or fountain. And I'm like, no. So I thought that, you know, that people would never forget it, but instead they're just like, I know it's something weird.
I'm so sick of that lying Emily. That's what they're going to say.
Yes, exactly.
We'll talk about this a little later, but, you know, being on a Tina Fey sitcom, it's not going to help you with those questions. People are going to be asking it more and more.
That's true. There's this fountain girl after all.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. All right, well, we will start with you, as we start with all of our funny people on the show. Tell our listening audience, Fortune, where does Fortune find the funny?
Well, I mean, I grew up with a lot of funny people, and because I'm from the South, and so I grew up watching my uncles be crazy, and my mom is crazy, and so I would kind of watch their colorful ways of living life and find the humor in it, and now basically I just watch people, and I watch life happen around me, and if there's like a funny trait that somebody has, I'll like remember it and try to keep track of it so that when I'm thinking of characters, I'll be like, I remember when that weird lady on the street had a fanny pack and did, you know, this weird walk, and I'll sort of incorporate it into some new character.
But this is not to say that you were always dead set on comedy. I don't know if you know this. It's not like you majored in comedy there at Peace College.
I did not. No, it was a tiny school that, you know, only offered like five majors, and I was like, well, I know I suck at science, and I know I don't want to, you know, be a teacher. So I picked communications because it seemed like the broadest one. I was like, I don't know, that'll be all right. And then as part of communication, you could take theater, and so I took it kind of as an elective, and it became something that I really enjoyed, but they didn't really do comedies. It was all drama, so I would like try out for the play, and then he'd be like, all right, well, I'm gonna put you in the sound department. And I was like, all right, cool.
And then you did, you know, Fortune, just that so cliched thing that comics do. You went to Spain to teach English.
I did. I graduated college, and I just felt like, you know, I'm from a small town, and I went to a small college, and I was like, you know, I want to see the world and just see what's out there. And so for whatever reason, I picked Spain, and I took out a loan to get my plane ticket and worked a bunch of odd jobs and raised money to be able to live off of, and just went out there, like, not knowing what the heck I was doing. And I was like, I will figure it out as I go. So I was there for a year.
That's a while.
It is a while. I was like, I got there and I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? English, and my Spanish is terrible. Like the first 4 months, was like pointing at things. I could not pick up the language, and they like in Spain they speak with their tongue a lot, so it was even harder to understand.
I love that you wanted to give that loan back. You're like, can I give this back? Can I go back?
Oh, and I was like, God, I was like, I can't go back home. I look so stupid. So I was like, I'm gonna have to stick it out for the next year. And it ended up getting a lot better. And it was a wonderful experience. But at the time, I was just like, this is hard.
I bet. I don't know that I'm gonna be using this as a story for my students to inspire them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So then you go to L.A., and tell me about, I'm always interested in this piece, and when we talk with your fellow comics all the time about it, tell me about with that moment that you told your family, you know what, I'm going to make a go of this.
Well, I had been offered a job to come out to Los Angeles to be a personal assistant, and so they were kind of like, well, first of all, they were like, you're going to Spain? I'm like, yeah. Well, that's weird. I'm like, well, whatever. And then, so by the time I got around to being like, I'm going to Los Angeles, that scene, they're like, well, at least it's not another country. So, all right. And so I didn't, like, nothing could shock them anymore. So I did the assistant job, and I was like, this sucks. Like, I am not great at, like, running people's errands. Because, I mean, I barely can run my own errands. So the fact that that was my job is ridiculous. And then I was just like, I really got into comedy as kind of a hobby, and so I don't think they expected me to, like, make a career of it. And so my mom would always be like, don't you want to go to grad school? And don't you want to, I'm like, what would I study? Like, and I was like, what a waste of money. I was like, I already know I want to be a comedian. Why would I go spend thousands and thousands of dollars to just have a master's? That seems dumb. And she every year would be like, well, you could still go get a master's. I'm like, nothing. I'm going to go to comedy school and buy a lot of wigs.
I'm still on the part where you used another continent to break the ice of L.A., where L.A. looked better because you were in Europe.
Exactly.
I love it. Now, I know, you know, you did amazing work with the Groundlings, but what do you remember about that first time solo on stage?
Well, I guess so. The first one solo would have been when I started stand up, and I didn't know how to do it, so I took a stand up class. And at the end of the class, they had you do a stand up show. So I was really nervous about it. So I only invited one friend because I was like, I don't want to embarrass myself, but I at least want somebody who will give me honest feedback. And I got there and I did like 5 minutes, and I think I talked about something dumb, like about how I hate strawberries. Talk was not evolved yet, so.
That's comedy gold right there.
I know, like 5 minutes about strawberries. and then, I do remember it feeling comfortable. Like, I never was like, oh, this is nerve-wracking or this feels weird. It always felt like I belonged there, so that was nice.
Now, has your family come to see you many times, do comedy?
They have, they've come a lot more, yeah. They only really get to see me when I go to North Carolina, and every time I go home, they're definitely front and center.
But I would imagine they catch you on Chelsea Handler's show all the time.
Oh, they do. My mom is like, always, she will not miss an episode. And she's upset if she finds, if someone writes on her Facebook that I was on and she didn't see it. She's like, why didn't you tell me you were on tonight? And I was like, because I literally show up for like 2 seconds and then I'm done. And she's like, well, I wanted to see it. So I have the opposite problem. My of people that have neglect from their mom. I'm like, Mom, calm down.
Mom, I'm going to show you how to set up a Google alert, and then you're going to be all set.
Exactly.
There you go. I would imagine that, look, your writing is incredible, and you're so hilarious, but I got to say, that round table, that looks fun.
It's really fun. It's, you know, because I've been there 3 years now, and a lot of them have been there even longer, so at this point, like, we're all friends, and, you know, you get to be on there and talk about silly pop culture topics and laugh, and at that point, we're, like, trying to make each other laugh, and so I think people watching have fun because they see us having fun.
Totally, totally. Have you sat there, who did you sit there at the table with that you thought to yourself, oh my God, I can't believe I'm at this table with this person?
Well, I have to say, it's not because she's a legend. I mean, she's more infamous than she is, like, anything else. But when Lindsay Lohan hosted, I was just like, this is so bizarre. I don't know where else. And she did actually a really good job.
She did.
I didn't know what to expect. And the fact that, you know, she held it together, we were quite impressed. So yeah, that was those moments when you're just like, dang, this is crazy. And I did one with where Dave Grohl was the guest host, and you're just like, this guy is the best, and I'm sitting here right across from him. Like, you know, moments like that, you just kind of pinch yourself.
And I would imagine you have it on your resume somewhere that you got financial advice from Susie Orman.
I need to put it on my resume. Yeah, she was, we shot a sketch together, and that was super fun. She fussed at me for my, not, you know, having a bazillion accounts and put money into stocks, and she fussed at me for leasing my car. it was kind of fun to get fussed at by her.
Thank God you didn't tell her about the year in Spain. She never would have let you hear the end of it.
I know. She would have been like, you sent your money to him. What?
I love it. So, the big news, how about this Tina Fey show coming out on Fox?
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, we're shooting a pilot, so the hope is that it will be airing. We don't know yet, but it's got a good chance because, you know, it's Tina Fey, and she's so hilarious, and it's got a series commitment, which means that if they don't pick it up, you know, there's a penalty that they have to pay. So the hope is that it will be on the air in this fall. So I'm going to be filming that in about a month, and I can't wait. It's just such a funny show about this women's college, and Margaret Cho is one of the characters, and I think it's going to be awesome.
As a former dean of students, to have my role played by Margaret Cho, I'm all about it.
Oh, yeah. I know. Well, you're in good company there.
Now, tell everyone about your character.
I mean, basically, I'm playing myself, which is awesome. A lesbian RA who's very confident and sporty. So it could not be better because I went to women's college and I was an RA and I am in fact a lesbian.
Look
so
at that.
It could not be more perfect.
Don't we feel, and I'm just going to put us together in the we, don't we feel like that when we were RAs, it just prepared us for the rest of our lives?
Absolutely. It did. I never knew that it would come back to serve me in this way, but I'm glad that it has.
It's all just like the Groundlings. It's just you're on call doing other emergency things.
Exactly.
Totally. Now, tell everyone about, because I'm looking to get out there. I need a new mixed doubles partner. I heard you could be my new mixed doubles partner.
I'm pretty good. I know I don't have the body of a tennis player, and one would not assume that I'm athletic, but I grew up playing tennis. I played since I was 7, and I played in college, so I'm a bit of a baller when it comes to the court.
Bring it, Fortune. I am ready.
Well, we'll play.
We'll play. Well, you are coming here in a couple of weeks. You're coming to the Grog Shop, which I have to tell you, I just went to for the first time last week to see Erin Foley.
Oh, she's the best. Yeah.
She was hilarious. How gay would you say your act is?
I mean, it's just looking at me, I'm pretty gay. I don't know how much gayer I need to be. But, you know, there's something actually in there for everybody. I've got material about being gay and material about being Southern, material about my family. Like, I really like to have a mixture of everything. And, you know, it's a fun show. It's a show where people can kind of just let go and be silly and have a good time. So I'm excited. It's the first time that I've ever been to Cleveland, and I think it's going to be fun. So I hope people come.
I will be there. I will be there. Our favorite question to ask our gay comics, and I have to tell you, your brothers and sisters are very evenly divided on this. So you could be the tiebreaker. Do you prefer a gay audience or a straight audience?
You know, they both have different things to offer. I mean, gay audiences tend to be a little more fun and just having a good time, and they're not offended easily, so you can kind of say whatever. But I would never limit myself to just one audience. I mean, I like a mixture of everybody, because I feel like performing for straight people, you can also help change their mind and, you know, make it so that they're laughing and that if they ever had any sort of issue with gay people, they don't anymore, because somehow laughter seems to bridge that gap.
Nice. Now, you're traveling all around. Is there a place that you are just so excited to go to that you're headed soon?
Gosh, I don't know. Actually, I'm excited to go to Boston. I've been there before, but I've never performed there. So I'm pretty excited to see what the audiences are like up that way, because I don't get up to the Northeast very often, so it should be fun.
Nice. Let me just ask, how do you wrap your mind around everything going on with you right now? I would imagine it's just incredible.
I mean, it's been a really good couple of years. You know, Chelsea gave me, you know, quite a break, and she was the one that really introduced me to a much bigger audience. And so at this point in my career, I'm just trying to take that opportunity that she gave me and expand on it. And so I'm lucky that these opportunities are coming. And I take every day and thankful that it's happening, and try to just enjoy the ride as much as I can, and hope that people continue wanting to see me perform as long as possible.
Totally. Well, I got to tell you, I was at lunch today with 5 college professors, and they asked me who was on this week's show, and I told them, well, Fortune's on this week's show, and they flipped out. So apparently one of your niche markets are college professors.
There you
go. I love it. I love it. Well, tell everyone where they can go to learn more about the amazing things that you're doing.
You can go to my website, fortunethemester.com. I have an event section that has all my shows coming up. Or on Twitter at Fortune Funny. I'm always posting something weird on there. So check it out.
Love it. Love it. Well, here in Cleveland at the Grog Shop on February 27th, I will be there. And then at the Wall Street Club in Columbus, Ohio, the next day on February 28th, I encourage, you know, both people who want to go and you, Fortune, to bundle up, because it's kind of cold out there. All right. It's just a warning. Fortune, so excited to see you in a couple weeks. And thank you so much for your humor. You know, we've been hearing from listeners all week long who knew you were going to be on the show, who said, you know what? That's one of those comics out there that I can totally access, that has that humor that just speaks to me. And that's you.
Well, I love that. Well, thank you for saying that. My mom will be very proud.
We love it. Fortune, we will see you in a couple weeks. Thank you so much for doing what you do.
Of course. Thanks for talking to me.
Cheer me home to see my kin. Singing songs about the Southland.
All right, folks, and we are back with another amazing guest for this week's episode. Rebecca Kling is an artist and an educator who explores gender and identity through solo pieces and educational workshops. Her multidisciplinary performances incorporate conversational storytelling, personal narrative, humor, movement, video production, and so much more. I've been watching so many clips on YouTube. I've done this whole Rebecca Kling immersion. She's received praise from the Chicago Tribune, Time Out Chicago, New City Stage, tons of other publications. She speaks all over the country at high schools and universities and theater festivals. Her writing has been published in Jezebel, in Chicago's IRL, Issues 1 and 2, Bodies of Work, the Center for Classic Theater Review, and elsewhere. In 2013, she was named as part of the inaugural Trans 100, a list of transgender educators, activists, artists, and more who are working to further trans rights and support the trans community. Rebecca, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thanks so much. good to be here.
You are the, I have to tell you, perfect example of someone who one of our listeners wrote in and said, you have to get Rebecca Kling on the show. And we said, okay, we'll try to get Rebecca Kling on the show. And here you are.
Here I am.
Love it. Love when listeners demand our guests. So you are. Do you have the sense that you are in demand?
I mean, it depends what kind of demand.
We'll figure it out as we talk.
That sounds like a plan.
So I've been, like I said, I've been watching all these YouTube clips, and I've been seeing all these amazing things you do. Let's start with your name, because you have such an interesting story behind the name Rebecca. Tell everyone about the name Rebecca.
Absolutely. So one of the things that people are often curious about with trans individuals is how do we choose new names? And that's certainly not something everyone does. Some people have androgynous names or just have names that they don't care. They're not concerned with the gender of their name. But for myself, when I was in middle school, I was doing a genealogy project, and my mom volunteered without me asking that Rebecca had been one of the names that they had chose, that she and my dad had chose before I was born. And it just seemed like the right name.
Wow. So when you informed your mom, she said, oh, yeah, we know that name.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have confirmed that story with her. That is not a story that I made up.
We believed you, Rebecca, just so you know.
Yeah, but sometimes you remember things differently than
totally
your parents.
Totally. So let's talk about this. I love – well, it's interesting. I was about to say this dichotomy between artist and educator. I'm going to have you talk about the artist side and the educator side, but now I'm going to back up a step and ask you, do you see them as two separate roles, or are they merged together in your head?
I see them as two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the material I'm presenting, particularly for things like Trans 101 or being an ally of the trans community, you sort of need a blackboard or a whiteboard. You need to go through language. Some schools, particularly schools that have a trans community, are really interested in talking about the history of the trans community or about trans issues and feminism. And for that stuff, a classroom format, ideally with good, lively discussion, is really going to be the way to convey that information.
Yeah.
On the other side of the coin, there's narrative and the I call it the touchy-feely. And so thinking about the education side of the coin being what is going on, what are these words, what is this identity, and the performance and the storytelling side being, and why should I care?
Yeah. How would you describe yourself? Maybe very similarly for both of them, but let's start with artists. How would you describe yourself as an artist?
Primarily spoken word and storytelling. I come from a background that's very interested in language and interested in adaptation. So most of the performance pieces I'm doing start from writing. They start from blog posts, usually, and turn into performance, starting from just reading from the written page, and then as I get a feel for things, adding things like movement, projection, audience interaction, that sort of thing.
Nice. And how would you describe yourself as an educator?
As an educator, I think there's a lot of storytelling there as well. One of the things I enjoy about teaching the material that I do is that I get a chance to insert anecdotes and to use humor and to not – this is stuff that is often presented as very serious and there's no room for levity. And I think there are good reasons for that, reasons having to do with the increased risks that the trans population have for mental health issues, for homelessness, for unemployment. There's a long list of ways that the trans community is at higher risk for hardship.
Yeah.
But going into a classroom environment, starting from there, is tricky. And so I like the opportunity to go in and interact with students on a level that isn't quite as heavy, and then get to that and absolutely talk about it and acknowledge that, but use my background as a performance to hopefully be a more engaging instructor as well.
Totally. Now, not everybody gets how these processes work. You know, I'm a college professor. I've been working in student affairs for a decade, so I've booked many an artist and an educator to campus. When folks are reaching out to you and saying, Rebecca, we need you to come to our campus, what are they generally asking you to do?
Well, there isn't a one-size-fits-all. In general, I partner or pair a workshop with a performance. So I'll do Trans 101 in the morning, and I'll do a performance in the afternoon, or I'll do Being an Ally one day, and I'll do a performance the next day. And again, I feel like that allows for a broad range of interests and for people on the campus to sort of meet me where they're at.
Yeah. Tell me about some colleges that you never would have dreamed that you went to, and then you were there.
Well, I think a lot of the opportunities, ranging from being in small town Pennsylvania and having dinner with the one out trans person on campus and talking about isolation and the importance of community,
wow,
to being at schools in Boston or Manhattan in huge metropolitan areas and seeing students excited about the engagement with the trans community and students who were not trans getting excited about bringing a trans speaker to their campus.
Now, when you're doing Trans 101 workshops, so I got in a lot of trouble last year, Rebecca, because I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post where I said, you know what, I just can't do LGBT 101 programs anymore. I frankly, just speaking from the eye, I got tired of the same questions and I wanted all of the audiences to be farther along than they were, and apparently you can't mandate that for the whole world.
I think that's totally fair. And I'm going to steal that question for a moment and take it as an opportunity to talk about privilege. I come from a very privileged background. I am white. I have parents who are supportive. I am middle class. I'm college educated. I have been able to transition both socially and for financial reasons and have ended up relatively conventionally attractive. All of that has meant that I think I have more energy for mm-hmm. things like Trans 101. And so I try to use the position of privilege that I'm coming from to do some of that groundwork.
Nice.
And to be willing to meet students where they're at and go through some of those same questions over and over again. Now, I don't know that I'm going to be interested in doing that 10 years or 20 years or 30 years or 40 years down the road, but right now I enjoy doing Trans 101 with students who are interested in learning it.
Now, listeners, if you want to book Rebecca, she will come to your campus and she will be patient and she will answer every question passionately and comprehensively. But just for this second, Rebecca, is there one question that you keep getting asked that you would love to retire?
Well, I think the way I phrase this, and this is coming from my middle school students up through adult classes, is I don't think there's such a thing as a stupid question. There are, however, mean questions.
Yeah.
And this is the difference between, oh my God, your hair, it looks so different. Where did you get it cut? Versus, oh my God, your hair looks so different. Where did you get it cut?
Right.
And so if a question is asked with the honest intent to learn, I generally don't have a problem with it. It's when questions are asked with an agenda, things like, well, aren't you going against the natural order of male and female? And that's not asked with an intent to learn. That's asked with an agenda.
Right.
I would say that if there is one piece of information that I could spread around, it is to remind people that gender and sexuality are not the same thing.
Yeah.
And this is something that we've gotten better at as a culture, because once upon a time, all men were attracted to women and all women were attracted to men. Obviously, that wasn't true, but that was the perception. And we've shifted that perception. Being a man does not automatically mean you're attracted to women and vice versa. But when you throw in gender and trans identity, people forget that. So there is a population of people, some very well-meaning and just uninformed, and some PhD holders at major American institutions who should just go away and stop speaking, who say that people transition for sexual reasons.
Oh, gosh.
And that's just not true.
Right. Right. You know, that's the irony in all this. And in the number of speaking engagements I've done, the problems have often come from the, and I hate using this phrase, and my students would kill me if they heard me using it, but the quote-unquote adults in the room. The students were always
yeah.
fantastic. But then you had the advisor who was the one who really was perpetuating the problems.
Well, and I've heard that, and I'm obviously not going to name schools, but have definitely heard that from people that I've worked with in booking touring events
yeah.
who have said, the student population is going to love that you're here. We have some professors who may be less excited.
Right, Right. Yeah. No, I've experienced it. And you said this before, but to be clear, you're not just going to colleges and universities. You just recently spoke at a seventh grade class. Did you not?
I did.
I don't do that, Rebecca. It scares the crap out of me.
So I come from a teaching background where I teach theater. I teach middle and high school theater, so I'm used to dealing with that age group. And again, it goes back to clarifying that any question is okay as long as it's not being mean. And they get that better than the adults do sometimes.
Nice. Nice.
And so I'm also fortunate that I live in the Chicago area, and I'm fortunate to, through some of these non-gender and sexuality, through some of these theatrical teaching connections, and having just grown up in the area, having connections with schools who are then willing to bring me in for that age group.
I love it. I love it. You know, in one of the clips online of you, it's these three words that, Rebecca, if we could get everybody to do these, I think every movement would be in a better place. But you did so beautifully characterize them when you just said, you know, one of the things that you learned was to pick your battles.
Yes. And I'm not good at that by disposition. I come from, my father was an anti-war activist in the 60s. I look up to him immensely, and one of the things that I got from him was a fighting spirit that is not always good at knowing when to back down.
Tell me about a time, because we love stories about this, and you're a storyteller. Tell us about a time that you picked a battle, and or maybe you picked to not pick a battle, and it really just worked out for you in the long run.
Well, I think from the not picking a battle, when I legally changed my name, I had to go before a judge and confirm that I was not doing it for fraudulent purposes and that I had all my paperwork and yada, yada, yada. And the judge sirred me quite a bit, which I was presenting in a way that is conventionally considered feminine. I was there to change my name, Rebecca. Seems sort of like a douchey thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I kept my mouth shut.
How? I couldn't do that, Rebecca.
I wanted to get out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The flip side of that is when I was coming back from, I had gender reassignment surgery in December, and I was coming back from Philadelphia, which is where I had the surgery, and I have surgical dilators, which are fancy plastic dildos that I use to help the healing and keep the surgical site healing properly. And the TSA agent took them out and asked me what they were, and I said very loudly using my good projection voice, "Oh, those are surgical dilators that I use for my new vagina." And she sort of, well, we're going to need to run into the X-ray, and then I want to make you go away.
That's the kind of stuff we need to get on YouTube. It's a teachable moment. It's a teachable moment. Well, I have to ask you about that personal side, because I would imagine, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that one of the struggles in being Rebecca Kling is that people always have this expectation that you're going to be in educator mode, when I would imagine
right.
that sometimes you want to turn it off.
That's something I've had to think a lot about, is sort of when I have my educator hat on and when I'm willing to take it off and set boundaries. That's not something I'm great at. Again, because I'm sharing a lot of my life on Facebook, I'm sharing a lot of my life on my blog, I'm sharing a lot of my life when touring, and something that I am still learning how to do is when to say, actually, I let's talk about that tomorrow, or shoot me an email, and let's talk about it later in the week. Right now, I'm just out at karaoke or interested in playing the board game or whatever it is.
Now that you just opened that door, is there a signature Rebecca Kling karaoke song?
Anything Disney.
Look at you.
I have a couple friends that consistently I will sing Aladdin, and some of them will sing Jasmine.
Oh, where is that YouTube clip? There's all these new things you need to create. You need to create them. And, you know, with the new Aladdin musical coming out, you're going to be front and center.
There's a new Aladdin musical coming out?
Oh, Rebecca, this is why we do these interviews. Yes, it's coming to Broadway in just a few months.
What the what?
You're like, I didn't know what I was going to get out of this interview, but then that revelation happened, and look where we are.
I have feelings, and I don't know exactly how I feel about it.
We'll work through them. Yeah, by the way, when I say we'll work through them, we won't, because what I've learned so far about you is that you and I should never work together with our inability to always pick our battles and the boundaries thing that I think we both suck at.
Well, I think that just means that we're going to be a stronger, fierce fighting force together.
There you go. There you go. And speaking of fighting forces, and I follow you on Facebook, and you put this out there and on your blog, the Global Action for Trans Equality and the American Jewish World Service, they put out a new report called The State of Trans and Intersex Organizing. And folks can easily either just go over to your site and they can download it there, or they can just Google it. It's quite a fascinating report about where we are right now with trans and intersex organizing. What did you take away from all of that?
The thing that I took that was most exciting is that work is being done everywhere.
Yeah.
I think it is easy as an American, as, again, someone who is coming from numerous positions of privilege, to focus on, you know, bathroom access on campus for gender-neutral bathrooms. And don't get me wrong, that's super important.
Yeah.
But I think it's then easy to lose sight of places where being, where expressing trans identity is punishable by imprisonment or beating or death, and placing the struggles that we're facing in context and finding ways to both push the movement forward in the States or in the Western world, and also be mindful of and fighting for trans and gender variant people all around the world.
Because again, it's this whole idea of doing the 101, which we do all the time. Take us to that 201 level. Where should we go next, hand in hand?
Well, I think the first thing that I would love to see is a more cohesive and broad look at what it means to be an LGBT or queer activist.
Yeah.
That I think, in addition to support for gender variance and support for trans identity and for genderqueer identity and for non-binary identity, I want to see an LGBT activist movement that also consciously and consistently focuses on racial and economic equality and on prison reform and on homelessness and on sex workers' rights and on all of the overlapping communities that homelessness and LGBT issues are not the same thing,
right?
But there's a really important overlap. And the same for a lot of those other things that, again, fighting for marriage equality is super, super important, and it is so exciting to see in my adult life in the last decade or so this huge shift in the cultural perception of gay marriage. At the same time, it frustrates me to see that being perceived sometimes, and certainly not by everyone and certainly not all the time, but being perceived as the end-all, be-all issue.
Right, right, and having it just being equated with, yes, this is equality for all LGBT people because marriage equality, that's all there is. And it's like,
right.
Well, I think our community's slightly more nuanced than that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if trans 101 is, here are some different words for identity, here are some different components of identity, trans 201 would be, and here's how important racism is in negatively impacting the trans community, and here's how important classism is in negatively impacting the trans community. And here's why to be a super strong and awesome gold star trans ally, you also need to be conscious of one, also needs to be conscious of those issues and more.
Nice, nice. Well,
which is big, which is scary. It's
huge.
I know I've also heard on college campuses people running LGBT centers saying they've gotten some gentle pushback from staff who said, well, I thought we did this already. I thought we handled gay rights on campus, and now you're saying there's more stuff we have to deal with?
Yeah. Yeah. And even on the more progressive campuses that do have gender identity or its expression as part of their non-discrimination statement, it actually, as you mentioned, that is about a little bit more than just bathroom access.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we're getting somewhere. We're getting somewhere. You mentioned earlier your recent surgery. We all want to know, how are you healing? How are you feeling?
Healing is slow and boring, which it probably should be. It would be, you know, my doctor probably wouldn't be happy if I was saying healing was exciting and, I don't know, dramatic.
Right.
So surgery sucks. Any surgery sucks. No one
totally.
Ever is excited about surgery. The healing process, what I was told, and which has been pretty accurate, is that the first 6 weeks were hurting less and less, and the next 6 weeks were actually starting to feel good. And that's been pretty accurate. The first 6 weeks, I had lots of aches and pains, and moving was hard, and dealing with the universe was hard, and I'm now at a point where I don't hurt, and I'm almost exactly 2 months out, 2 months tomorrow. I don't hurt, but I'm still don't have a ton of stamina. I'm still having to take it slow, and so I'm still working back to a regular schedule.
I like the part where your healing is boring.
There's been a lot of Netflix, a lot of video games.
Have you not reached the end of the internet yet? I would imagine you're getting there.
I have watched all of Friends, all of Breaking Bad.
Yes, I saw that you were indulging. Oh, yes. Those are good ones.
I watched all of the shows.
I love it. Yeah, I saw you were indulging in Breaking Bad. I'm like, what's going on over there? That's fun. Now, what kind of responses have you gotten? See, this is interesting. This is a little bit of an interesting juxtaposition, because obviously there was quite a bit of news, what was it, 3-4 weeks ago, when Katie Couric, in her naivete or ignorance, let's go with both of those, asked some pretty just insensitive questions to Laverne Cox when she was on the show. And in some ways, there have been responses online of, hey, but then we should never be talking about surgery at all. And I don't agree with that. And you have been really open in putting out there on your blog and on your Facebook presence, this is where I am right now. This is a part of my process, and it doesn't define me, but I'm in that healing mode right now.
Yes, but I'm doing it exactly the way you say, which is intentionally.
Yeah.
That I have chosen, as an artist and as an activist, to be very transparent in almost all of my life. If I was working on a project that had nothing to do with that, or if I was choosing to present myself in public in a different way, I would be very frustrated if those were the questions that people were asking.
Yeah.
I think that Katie Couric was asking inappropriate questions, and that Laverne Cox shot her down in a really beautiful way.
Very much so.
Not because it's not important or legitimate for people to want to know about trans identity, but because not every trans person is choosing to be an educator in that way.
Right. Right. Totally. Totally.
That you have, presumably, have a penis, and I don't know this because we've never had that conversation
right
before, doesn't automatically give me the right or the it doesn't give me an appropriate venue to open up and ask you about it. How's your penis doing? How big are your erections? When did you first realize that you liked masturbating? And in the same way, a trans person having had surgery, even if that information is public, doesn't open the door for any and all questions about it.
Right. That's why I just want to know how you're healing. I like the part where you're healing. That's all that matters to me right now. Hey, by the way, Rebecca, as I said in your intro, how about that Trans 100?
I feel incredibly grateful and proud to have been named on that, and it makes me want to work harder as an activist and live up to what I feel like are the really amazing other honorees on that list. And I'm very, very excited. I'm production managing the event this year, and so we're currently in the planning stages for the 2014 Trans 100 launch event, which will be on March 30th in Chicago.
With all due respect, I think your response is just 100% off. I think this means you get to retire now, not work harder.
That would be nice.
I think you just went the wrong direction. Tell us about who else is on that list who we may not know about, who we should definitely know about. And I know there's 99 other people who we should definitely know about, but give us a couple that we should go right now and look up because they're just life-changing stuff.
Well, the thing that's exciting about the Trans 100 is that it has a goal of being very broad.
Yeah.
And so looking through the list, there are other artists like myself, there are educators, there are activists, there are video game designers. I would say a couple of people to definitely check out. Dr. Courtney Ryan Ziegler is based out of the West Coast and has, in the last 6 months, launched the first trans hackathon. to this idea of gathering a bunch of trans and allied computer programmers and community supporters together to create computer programs and websites, and in 24 or 48 hours, sort of have a hackathon to push forward trans rights and support the trans community.
Nice.
I would also check out in Chicago Andre Perez, who works with the Trans Oral History Project, which is a program that works to interview trans people to sort of maintain this oral history and gets lost in a disparate community like the trans community.
Now, you're just throwing out Andre Perez because there's no way you even know this, that I used to be Andre's dean.
I did not know that.
Look at
Andre
that.
Andre is lovely.
Oh, yeah,
small
come
world.
On. Marlboro College, this is what we do. I love it.
Small world.
It's always a small world. It's always a small world. Well, tell everyone where they can go to find out about all the amazing things that you're doing.
The hub for info is RebeccaKling.com, K-L-I-N-G. From there, you can find links to Twitter and Facebook and email and Carrier Pigeon. You can also find links to my blog, where most of the writing that I do comes from a couple of things that I'm excited about right now. On my website, if you go to the Read section, you can find my book, which is available for purchase via Amazon.
Awesome.
Or ebook, or a free PDF download. I think it's important that people have access, even if they don't necessarily have financial resources. And then I'm also currently working with a Chicago sex toy store, Early to Bed, which is a great feminist store, on a guide for sex with and as trans women.
Nice. And you left out, I got to say, one of the most important gigs that you'll be doing in 2015. Rebecca Kling and I will be touring the country with our new Aladdin Broadway stage performance. So it's pretty exciting.
It's going to be a whole new world.
See what you did there? That was awesome. Rebecca, look, I've been doing this immersion. I will keep doing this immersion. You, first of all, I love that you're a faithful blogger and that you keep putting stuff up there and you don't just disappear. You have such an authentic voice in the way that you put yourself out there. I love these two sides of this coin of artist and educator. I think that to change people's minds, we just use our authentic voices, and that's what you're doing. And what a great honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, a little bit of time left on this week's episode, so we can throw out some LGBT news and my own views at you. The big news of the week, I don't see how you could have missed it, was the coming out of Michael Sam, a college football player who is soon to be drafted into the NFL. This is not some, you know, sixth stringer. This is a guy who is just one of the top defensive players in college football, and so he will be drafted right away, and he will become the first openly gay, out, professional football player who's actually in the sport while they're gay and not coming out afterwards. So it's obviously a huge deal. But I gotta say, some of the media coverage about it has been bothersome, to say the least. It's like the media outlets are just fishing for homophobia and almost frustrated. You can almost feel that, like a palpable frustration if they're not getting it. Huffington Post, which of course I love the Huffington Post and I write for the Huffington Post and we have the editor-in-chief of the Gay Voices section on the show all the time, but just ran this really frustrating piece called 18 Disgusting Responses to Michael Sam, Gay Football Star Coming Out. This was the entirety of this piece. And so I'll just read to you the beginning. College football star Michael Sam made history last night when he became the first active Division I college football player to come out as gay. He's also eligible for the 2014 draft and poised to become the first active openly gay player in the league's history, as I've already told you. And then there's this. There has been speculation for quite some time as to when an active member of the NFL or a Division I college player would come out of the closet. Sam's coming out is nothing short of groundbreaking, but that doesn't mean everyone is happy about it, and much of the social media firestorm that followed in its wake proved to be, unfortunately, predictably horrifying. Okay? So when a celebrity passes away, let me just say this. When a celebrity passes away, Entertainment Weekly, a lot of different news outlets, like when Philip Seymour Hoffman died and Shirley Temple, unfortunately, just passed away as well, they always do this compendium of celebrity tweets, which I find mildly interesting in my fascination with celebrities and, hey, what are celebrities saying about something happening? But this Huffington Post piece, this 18 disgusting responses to Michael Sam, gay football star, coming out, they're just 18 folks who have Twitter accounts tweeting about it. And I guess I don't really understand why we're giving them the light of day. You know, they would really get no press otherwise. And they're really not getting attention. The attention that they're getting is because the Huffington Post just ran a piece on them. So I'm just not exactly sure what it illustrates. If it was a call to action, by the way, if it was a call to action, I am all for that. Let's put a piece out there that says, here are 18 people that you should totally follow on Twitter and tweet at them every single time they do something homophobic. Something like that. But not just like raising the level of awareness of the homophobia out there. I'm all for being a realist and understanding what's going on in the world and, you know, not painting a picture that isn't reality. But at the same time, I don't know. I felt like it was fishing. Here in Cleveland, I was sitting and watching the local newscast talking about Michael Sam's coming out. And again, it was just felt a little bit desperate. They had folks out there just trying to get people to say homophobic and horrible things. And it was almost disappointing to them when the people on the street said, yeah, no, it's okay. He's going to be fine. So the folks who are getting a ton of press right now are the, what was it, a New Orleans Saint linebacker who said something like, you know, I'd be uncomfortable in the locker room. It's one of all of the players in the NFL, and he's getting all the press. So it just feels a little bit desperate. I will say that there are some cool stories coming out where there are actions being taken. Right here in Ohio at Kent State, a Kent State wrestler named Sam Wheeler has been suspended from the university's wrestling team after taking to his Twitter account and voicing his feelings about Michael Sam's coming out. I'm not even going to say what he said because he said pretty bad things. And then he was suspended. And I'm all for that. I'm all for the university saying, you know what, this doesn't represent what we're all about. And you can't conduct yourself in this way. As a college official, I am all for colleges taking an action like that. The director of athletics said this, quote, we are aware of the insensitive tweets by one of our student athletes. On behalf of Kent State University, we consider these comments to be ignorant and not indicative of the beliefs held by our university community as a whole. This is an educational opportunity for all of our student athletes. So again, let's go back to that first story. Let's go back to the 18 disgusting responses to Michael Sam, gay football star, coming out. I'm all for, if people are going to make public comments, I think that they should be accountable. I have absolutely no problem if you have the free time to do it. I'm not doing it. But if you want to research, okay, this is who this guy is who tweeted this, and so let's just alert his football coach to this or whatever his affiliation is. I'm for it. I'm for employers knowing, hey, you have an employee who's representing your company in their social media account by putting this stuff out there. You're affiliating yourself with them, and this is what they are affiliating with you. So I'm for social action like that. I like when there are consequences. So bravo to you, Kent State. There is other news out there. A Maryland teenager. I love this story. A Maryland teenager is the first openly gay Boy Scout to become an Eagle Scout, the organization's highest rank, according to the advocacy group Scouts for Equality. High school senior Pascal Tessier is already awaiting the next challenge, which will come this summer when he turns 18. Until recently, gay scouts had been banned. After years of debate, the organization eliminated the ban for minors effective January 1st, but kept the restriction against adult scouting leaders. Pascal, who turns 18 on August 5th, has said he will apply to become an adult leader and see how the scouts respond. His mother said this, quote, on August 4th, he's an Eagle Scout and has the highest honor. August 5th, all of a sudden, he's no longer good enough to be a Boy Scout. The Boy Scouts Public Relations Director, Daron Smith, said in a written statement, there are no plans for further review. So in just a few months, after all of the achievement of becoming a Boy Scout, becoming an Eagle Scout, from one day he will have this affiliation, and then the next day, all those values that he's been taught, all of the great work that he's been done, the Boy Scouts will say it is all for naught, and he will be denied that membership. So if he is denied the membership, his mother said it's unlikely he will sue because the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that private organizations have significant discretion in determining whom to accept. So we'll keep our eyes on that. So let's start with kudos to Pascal Tessier, who has become the first openly gay Eagle Scout. So that's really awesome. And then boo on you, Boy Scouts, for taking away that honor from him on August 5th from one day to the next. Great, amazing news coming out of the Obama administration. The U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder published the Justice Department's formal guidance on how the federal government will treat legally married same-sex couples, making good on a pledge he announced at the Human Rights Campaign Gala last week in New York City. The formal announcement confirms that the federal government will extend most of the benefits and privileges of marriage to same-sex couples whose marriage was legal in the jurisdiction where it was performed, regardless of where the couples reside permanently. A ton of Facebook posts. I've seen this all over my news feed there of folks saying, you know what? You wondered what would be the difference between an Obama administration and a Mitt Romney administration, and this is one of them, that this is not something that would have happened under the Mitt Romney administration. So yay for Eric Holder, yay for the Obama administration. We love that story. And in the horrific story of the week, seriously, this is happening. This just happened. Just the other day, the story I'm going to tell you actually happened. A Roman Catholic priest in Missouri told a grieving daughter that she would not be able to receive communion at her mother's funeral because she was in a same-sex relationship. The pastor at St. Columban Catholic Church in Missouri, I can't even pronounce, Chillicothe, Missouri, told Carol Parker and her partner of 20 years, Josephine Martin, that he would not be able to welcome them to communion because the obituary for her mother, who died in December, listed Parker and her partner as survivors. Unbelievable. Martin told a local affiliate there, a local station there in Kansas City, she said, quote, if that one word partner had not been in there, he would be fine. Parker said she's been an active member at St. Columban for over a decade, singing in the choir and serving as a lector. She said she laments the loss of her faith community. She said this, quote, to be singing in the choir and be lectors and everything, it's all God. He just took it away in a second. I just really don't understand where his heart is. That happened. That, like, actually happened, that someone was denied communion at their mother's funeral by a pastor who read in the obituary that she was in a same-sex relationship. I don't know what we do about that, but that's something that we have to do something about. He's not being asked to perform their marriage. It's not like they went and said, you know, I almost just said rabbi, or the rabbi, pastor, whoever, please perform our same-sex marriage. That's not what he was asked to do. Give the communion at the woman's mother's funeral. That's what we do when we recognize ourselves as compassionate people, which my hope is in the church. That's where we really recognize ourselves as compassionate people. What the hell do I know? I'm just a gay Jew from Jersey. So there you go. Hey, guess what? Next week, our 250th episode, there will be no bells and whistles. It's not going to be crazy. It's not going to be like we did for our 100th episode where we got all these different people to wish us a happy episode. We just want to do business as usual. We want to highlight the people that we have the amazing opportunity to highlight. We stepped it up a little bit because I was able to get some dream guests that I've been waiting for a while, and I'll even tell you who they are right this very second. On next week's show, the executive director of GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, Dr. Eliza Byard. She is incredible. GLSEN, as you all well know, is my organization of choice. If I'm going to give money to a national organization, I am one of those, I give money locally, but if I'm going to give to a national organization, an LGBT organization, it's going to be GLSEN. They're so allied with everything I believe in about reducing bullying in schools. So she's going to be on the show for our social justice and nonprofit and social change side. And then for our entertainment side, because we always present, you know, both sides on every single show, as we did today, Suzanne Westenhofer, the legendary comedian Suzanne Westenhofer, is going to be on the show. So I'm just so excited. It's exactly what I wanted to do for our 250th episode. So that's what we are going to do. Our thanks to Fortune Feimster, who's out there on the road. I'll see her in a couple weeks. Our thanks to Rebecca Kling, who's doing amazing work. Our thanks to you all to listening. Get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to do it to make a difference in this world for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, hey, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?